the time the familiar, swirling lights had formed, and he'd had to lean on Mark and Julian to rise. Still, he had brushed off all concerns and informed them that they needed to go through the portal quickly. Idris was warded, and portaling there was a complex business, since someone had to be on the other side to receive you. It was doubly complex now, since Kieran was with them. And though Gia had waived the anti-fairy protections on the guard temporarily, the window for safe travel was short. Then, the portal had terrified Annabelle. She had never seen one before. And despite everything she'd been through, despite all the awful magic she'd seen Malcolm wreak, the sight of the whirling chaos inside the doorway made her scream. In the end, after the Shadow Hunters had all entered the portal, she went through with Magnus, clutching the black volume in her hands, her face hidden against his shoulder. Only to be met on the other side by a crowd of council members and the consul herself. Gia had blanched when she saw Annabelle and said in an astonished voice, "Is that really her?" Magnus had locked eyes with the consul for a moment. "Yes," he said firmly, "it is. She is." There was a babble of questions. Emma couldn't blame the assembled council members. There had been quite a few questions for Julian when he'd emerged from the library and told awaiting Magnus and Emma that Annabelle was coming with them to Idris. As he'd outlined his plan, Emma had caught sight of the expression on Magnus's face. The warlock had looked at Julian with a mixture of astonishment, respect, and something that might have looked a little like horror. But it had probably just been surprise. After all, Magnus had seemed sanguine enough, and had immediately set about sending a fire message to Gia to let her know what to expect. Emma had drawn Julian aside while blue sparks flew from Magnus's fingers. "What about the book?" she'd whispered. "What about the queen?" Julian's eyes glittered. "If this works, Annabelle will give us the black volume," he replied in a whisper, and he'd been looking at the library door as if Annabelle behind it were the answer to all their prayers. "And if not, I have a plan for that too." There'd been no chance to ask him what the plan was. Annabelle had stepped out of the library, looking fearful and shy. She looked even more fearful now as the hubbub rose around her. Kieran drew some of the fire by stepping up to announce himself as the envoy of the Seelie Queen, sent to speak on behalf of the Seelie Court to the Council of Shadow Hunters. He had been expected, but there was still a burst of more excited talking. "Put the wards back up," said the consul, inclining her head to Kieran. Her expression was polite, but the message was clear. Though Kieran was there to help them, all full-blooded fairies were still going to be treated with extreme suspicion by the Clave. Mark and Christina moved to Kieran's side protectively, while Magnus spoke quietly with the consul. After a moment, she nodded and gestured at Emma and Julian. "If you want to speak to Robert, go ahead," she said, "but keep it short. The meeting is soon." Emma was unsurprised as she and Julian headed toward the guards' offices to see that Livy, Ty, Kit, and Drew had flanked Annabelle protectively. Ty, especially, had his chin jutting out, his hands and fists. Emma wondered if he felt responsible for Annabelle because his letter had brought her to them, or if he felt some kind of kinship for those at odds with the Clave standards for normalcy. A door swung open.
"You can come in now," said a guard.
It was Manuel Villalobos wearing his Centaurian uniform. His start of surprise at seeing them was quickly hidden by a smirk. "An unexpected pleasure," he said. "We're not here to see you," said Julian. "Oh, nice to know you're opening doors for the Inquisitor these days. Is he here?"
"Let them in, Centaurian," Robert called, which was all the permission needed for Emma to shove by Manuel and stalk down the hallway. Julian followed her.
The short hall ended in the Inquisitor's office. He was sitting behind his desk, looking much the same as he had last time Emma had seen him at the Los Angeles Institute. A big man, only now beginning to show the marks of age. His shoulders were a little hunched, his dark hair woven thickly with gray. Robert Lightwood cut an imposing figure behind his massive mahogany desk. The room was largely unfurnished, aside from a desk and two chairs. There was an unlit fireplace, above whose mantle hung one of the series of tapestries on display in the hall outside. This one said, "The Battle of the Burren." Figures in red clashed with figures in black, shadow hunters and the undarkened ones, and above the melee, a dark-haired archer was visible standing on a tipped boulder, holding a drawn bow and arrow. To anyone who knew him, it was very clearly Alec Lightwood. Emma wondered what thoughts went through Robert Lightwood's mind as he sat each day in his office and looked at the portrait of his son, a hero of a now-famous battle. Pride, of course. But there must also be some wonder that he had created this person. These people, really, for Isabel Lightwood was no slouch in the heroics department, who had become so fierce and amazing in their own right. Someday Julian would have that pride, she thought, in Livy and Ty and Tavi and Drew. But her parents had never had the chance to feel it. She'd never had the chance to make them proud. She felt the familiar wave of bitterness and resentment pressing against her heart. Robert gestured for them to be seated. "I hear you want to talk to me," he said. "I hope this isn't meant to be some sort of distraction." "Distraction from what?" Emma asked, settling herself into the uncomfortable wing-back chair. "Whatever you're up to," he sat back. "So, what is it?" Emma's heart seemed to flip. Was this a good idea or a terrible one? It felt as if everything in her had been armoring against this moment, against the idea that she and Julian would have to spread their feelings out under the feet of the Clave for them to tread on. She watched Julian as he leaned forward and began to speak. He seemed absolutely calm as he spoke of his and Emma's early friendship, their affection for each other, their decision to be parabatai, brought on by the Dark War and the loss of their parents. He made it sound like a reasonable decision, no one's fault. Who could have blamed them, any of them? The Dark War had stricken them all with loss. No one could be at fault for overlooking details, for mistaking their feelings. Robert Lightwood's eyes began to widen. He listened in silence as Julian spoke of his and Emma's growing feelings for each other, how they both had realized what they felt separately, struggled in silence, confessed their emotions, and finally decided to seek the Inquisitor's assistance, and even the exercise of the law. "We know we've broken the law," Julian finished. "But it was not intentional, or under our control. All we want is your help." Robert Lightwood got to his feet. Emma could see the glass towers through his window, glimmering like burning banners. She could hardly believe that just that morning they'd been fighting the Riders in the courtyard of the London Institute. "No one's ever asked me if they could be exiled before," he said finally. "But you were exiled yourself once," said Julian. "Yes," Robert said. "With my wife, Maris, and Alec, when he was a toddler. And for good reason. It's a lonely thing, exile. And for someone as young as Emma," he glanced at them, "does anyone else know about you?" "No," Julian's voice was calm and firm. Emma knew he was trying to protect those who had guessed or had been told, but it unnerved her anyway, the way he could sound so absolutely sincere when he was lying. "And you're sure? This isn't a crush, or just..." "Parabatai feelings can be very intense," Robert sounded awkward as he clasped his hands behind his back. "They're easy to misconstrue." "We," said Julian, "are absolutely sure." "The usual measure would be separation, not exile." Robert looked from one of them to the other as if he still couldn't quite believe what was in front of him. "But you don't want that. I could see that already. You wouldn't have come to me if you thought I could only offer you the standard measures, separation, stripping of your marks. We can't risk breaking the law and the punishments that entails." Julian's voice was still calm, but Emma could see his hands, white-knuckled, gripping his chair arms. "My family needs me. My brothers and sisters are still young, and they have no parents. I've raised them, and I can't leave them. It's out of the question. But Emma and I know we can't trust ourselves just to stay away from each other." "So, you want to be separated by the Clave," said Robert. "You want exile, but you don't want to wait to be caught. You've come to me so you can choose which of you leaves, and for how long, and what punishment the Clave, directed by me, will decide on." "Yes," said Julian. "And though you're not saying it, I think you want some of what exile will do for you,"
said Robert. It'll deaden your bond. Maybe you think it'll make it easier for you to stop loving each other. Neither Emma or Julian spoke. He was uncomfortably close to the truth. Julian was expressionless. Emma tried to school her features to match his. Robert was tapping his fingertips together. "We just want to be able to be normal, Parabatai," said Julian finally. But Emma could hear the silent words beneath the audible ones. "We will never give each other up. Never." "It's quite something to ask." Emma strained to hear anger or reproach or disbelief in the Inquisitor's voice, but he sounded neutral. It frightened her. "You had a Parabatai," she said in desperation, "didn't you?" "Michael Wayland." Robert's tone was wintry. "He died." "I'm so sorry." Emma had known that, but the sympathy was sincere. She could imagine little more horrible than Julian dying. "I bet he would have wanted you to help us," Julian said. Emma had no idea if he spoke from knowledge of Michael Wayland or just intuition, that skill he had of reading the look in people's eyes, the truth in the way they frowned or smiled. "Michael would have, yes," Robert muttered. "He would have, by the angel. Exile will be a heavy burden for you, Emma. I can try to limit the terms of the punishment, but you'll still lose some of your Nephilim powers. You'll need permission to enter Alicante. There will be some marks you can't use. Seraph Blades won't light for you." "I have Cortana," said Emma. "That's all I need." There was sadness in Robert's smile. "If there's a war, you can't fight in it. That's why my exile was lifted, because Valentine returned and began the mortal war." Julian's expression was so tight that his cheekbones seemed to stand out like knife blades. "We won't accept the exile unless Emma's allowed to keep enough of her Nephilim power to be safe," he said. "If she's hurt because of this exile..." "The exile is your idea," said Robert. "Are you sure you'll be able to fall out of love?" "Yes," Julian lied. "Separation would be the first move anyway, wouldn't it? We're just asking for a little extra surety." "I've heard things," Robert said. "The law against Parabatai falling in love exists for a reason. I don't know the reason, but my guess is that it's significant." "If I thought you knew what it was..." He shook his head. "But you can't, possibly. I could speak with the Silent Brothers." No, Emma thought. They'd risked so much already. But if Robert learned of the curse, they'd be in very dangerous waters. "Magnus said you would help us," she said in a soft voice. "He said we could trust you, and that you'd understand and keep it a secret." Robert looked up at the tapestry that hung over his mantle. At Alec. He touched the lightwood ring on his finger, a likely unconscious gesture. "I trust Magnus," he said. "And I owe him a great deal." His gaze was distant. Emma wasn't sure if he was thinking about the past or considering the future. She and Julian sat tensely while he considered. Finally, he said, "All right. Give me a few days. The two of you will have to remain in Alicante while I look into managing the exile ceremony. And you must stay in separate houses. I need to see a good faith effort to avoid each other. Is that clear?" Emma swallowed hard. The exile ceremony. She hoped Jem could be there. Silent Brothers were the ones who presided over ceremonies, and even though he no longer was one, he had been at her Parabatai ceremony with Julian. If he could be there for this, she would feel a little less alone. She could see Julian's expression. He looked much as she felt, as if relief and dread were warring inside him. "Thank you," he said. "Thank you, Inquisitor," she echoed, and Robert looked surprised. She suspected no one ever thanked him for a sentence of exile before. Christina had never been in the guard's council hall before. It was a horseshoe-shaped space. Rows of benches marching toward a slightly raised dais, a second balcony level, containing more benches and seats, rose high above. Above the dais hung a huge golden clock, gorgeously made with delicate scrollwork and repeated Latin phrase, "Ultima Thule,"
marching around the rim. Behind the dais was an incredible wall of windows, giving out onto a view of Alicante below. She raised herself a little bit on tiptoe to see the winding streets, the blue slashes of the canals, the demon towers rising like clear needles against the sky. The hall was beginning to fill. Annabelle and Kieran had been taken to a waiting room, along with Magnus. The rest of them had been allowed in early and had claimed two rows of benches near the front. Ty, Kit, and Livy were sitting, engaged in conversation. Drew sat quietly on her own, seeming lost in thought. Christina was about to start toward her when she felt a light tap on her shoulder. It was Mark. He had dressed carefully for the council visit, and she felt a pang as she looked at him. He was so gorgeous in his pressed, old-fashioned clothes, like a marvelously colored old photograph. The dark jacket and waistcoat fit him well, and he had brushed his blonde hair so that it covered the tips of his ears. He had even shaved and nicked himself slightly on the chin, which was ridiculous because Mark had no facial hair to speak of. He looked to Christina like a little boy wanting to make a good impression on the first day of school. Her heart went out to him. He cared so much about the good opinion of a group of people who had agreed to abandon him to the wild hunt, despite the pleas of his family, just because of who he was. "Do you think Kieran will be all right?" Mark said. "They ought to treat the envoy from the court with more honor. Instead, they practically ran to put the wards back up as soon as we arrived." "He'll be fine," Christina assured him. Both Kieran and Mark, she thought, were stronger than the other one could believe, maybe because they'd been so vulnerable in the hunt. "Though I can't imagine Annabelle is much of a conversationalist. At least Magnus is with them." Mark gave a strained smile as a low murmur swept through the room. The Centaurians had arrived in full dress. They wore their uniforms of red, gray, and silver, and their silver pins on display. Each carried a staff of solid adamas. Christina recognized some from Los Angeles, like Zara's friend Samantha, with her thin, nasty face, and Rayan, looking around the room with an expression of concern. Zara led the procession, her head held high, her mouth a slash of bright red. Her lips curled in distaste as she passed Mark and Christina. But why wasn't Diego beside her? Had he not come with them? But no. There he was, almost at the end of the line, looking gray and tired, but definitely present. He paused in front of Mark and Christina as the other Centaurians passed by. "I got your message," he said to Christina in a low voice. "If it's what you want." "What message?" Mark said. "What's going on?" Zara appeared at Diego's side. "A reunion," she said. "How nice." She smiled at Christina. "I'm sure you'll all be pleased to hear how well everything went in Los Angeles after you left." "Very impressive of you, killing Malcolm," said Mark. His eyes were flat and glittering. "It seems to have resulted in quite a bit of advancement. Well earned, I'm sure." "Thank you," Zara laughed breathlessly, laying her hand on Diego's arm. "Oh," she said with a sharply artificial enthusiasm, "look." More shadow hunters had entered the room. They were a mix of ages, from old to young. Some wore Centaurian uniforms. Most wore gear or ordinary clothes. What was unusual about them was that they were carrying placards and signs. "Register all warlocks. Downworlders must be controlled. Praise the cold peace. Approve the registry." Among them was a stolid, brown-haired man with a bland sort of face. The kind of face where you could never really remember the features later. He winked at Zara. "My father," she said proudly. "The registry was his idea." "What interesting signs," said Mark. "How wonderful to see people expressing their political views," said Zara. "Of course, the cold peace has truly created a generation of revolutionaries." "It is unusual," said Christina, "for a revolution to call for fewer rights for people, not more." For a moment, Zara's mask slipped, and Christina saw through the artifice of politeness, the breathy little girl voice and demeanor. There was something cold behind it all, something without warmth or empathy or affection. "People," she said. "What people?" Diego took hold of her arm. "Zara," he said, "let's go sit down." Mark and Christina watched them go in silence.
I hope Julian's right, Livy said, staring at the empty dais.
He usually is, Ty said. Not about everything, but about this sort of thing.
Kit sat between the twins, which meant they were talking over him. He wasn't entirely sure how he'd ended up in this position. Not that he minded or even noticed at the moment. He was stunned into near silence, something that never happened, by where he was, in Alicante, the heart of the Shadowhunters' country, gazing at the legendary demon towers. He'd fallen in love with Idris at first sight. He hadn't expected that at all. It was like walking into a fairy tale. And not the sort he'd grown used to at the Shadow Market, where fairies were another kind of monster. The kind he'd seen on TV and in books when he was little. A world of magnificent castles and lush forests. Livy winked at Kit.
You've got that look on your face. What look? You're impressed by Idris. Admit it, Mr. Nothing impresses me.
Kit was going to do no such thing.
I like the clock, he said, pointing up at it.
There's a legend about the clock. She wiggled her eyebrows at him. For a second, when it chimes the hour, the gates of heaven open.
Livy sighed. A rare wistfulness flashed across her face.
As far as I'm concerned, heaven is just the Institute being ours again, and all of us going home.
That surprised Kit. He'd been thinking of this trip to Idris as the end of their chaotic adventure. They'd return to Los Angeles and he'd start his training. But Livy was right. Things weren't that assured.
He glanced over at Zara and her immediate circle, bristling with their ugly signs.
There's still the black volume, too, said Ty. He looked formal and neat-haired in a way he didn't usually. Kit was used to him being casual in his hoodies and jeans, and handsome, older-looking Ty left him a bit tongue-tied.
The Queen still wants it.
Annabelle will give it to Jules. I believe in his ability to charm anything out of anyone, Livy said. Or trick anything out of anyone.
But, yeah, I wish they didn't have to actually meet with the Queen afterwards. I don't like the sound of her.
I think there's a saying about this, said Kit. Something about bridges and crossing them when you get there.
Ty had gone rigid, like a hunting dog spotting a fox. Livy? His sister followed his gaze, and so did Kit. Coming toward them through the crowd was Diana, a smile breaking across her face, her koi fish tattoo shimmering across one dark cheekbone. With her were two young women in their early 20s. One resembled Gia Penhallow more than a little. She also had dark hair and a decided chin. The other looked incredibly like Mark Blackthorne, down to the curling, pale blonde hair and pointed ears. They were both bundled in unseasonably warm clothes, as if they'd come from a cold climate. Kit realized who they were before Livy's face lit up like the sun.
Helen! She screamed and bolted into her sister's arms.
The clock in the council hall was chiming through the guard, signaling that all Nephilim were to gather for the meeting. Robert Lightwood had insisted on leading Julian from his office to the room where Magnus, Kieran, and Annabelle were waiting. Unfortunately for Emma, that meant she was stuck with Manuel as her escort to the council hall. Emma wished she could have a moment alone with Julian, but that wasn't going to happen. They exchanged a wry look before going their separate ways.
"Looking forward to the meeting?"
Manuel asked. He had his hands in his pockets. His dirty blonde hair was artfully tousled. Emma was surprised he wasn't whistling.
"No one looks forward to meetings," said Emma. "They're a necessary evil."
"Oh, I wouldn't say no one," said Manuel. "Zara loves meetings."
"She seems in favor of all forms of torture," Emma muttered.
Manuel spun around, walking backward down the corridor. They were in one of the larger hallways that had been built after the guard burned in the Dark War.
"Have you ever thought about becoming a Centaurian?" he said.
Emma shook her head.
"They don't let you have a parabatai."
"I always figured that was kind of a pity thing, you and Julian Blackthorne," said Manuel.
"I mean, look at you. You're hot, you're skilled, you're a Carstairs. Julian spends all of his time with little kids. He's an old man at 17.
Emma wondered what would happen if she threw Manuel through a window. probably it would delay the meeting. I'm just saying, even if you don't want to go to the Scholomance, the cohort could use someone like you. We're the future. You'll see.
His eyes glittered. For a moment they weren't amused or joking. It was the glitter of real fanaticism, and it made Emma feel hollow inside. They had reached the doors of the council hall. There was no one in view. Emma kicked her leg out and swept Manuel's feet out from under him. He went over in a blur and hit the ground. He pushed up instantly on his elbows, looking furious. She doubted she'd hurt him, except maybe where his dignity was located, which had been the point.
"I appreciate your offer," she said. "But if joining the cohort means I'd have to spend my life stuck halfway up a mountain with a bunch of fascists, I'll take living in the past."
She heard him hiss something not very nice in Spanish as she stepped over him and walked into the hall. She reminded herself to ask Christina for a translation when she got a chance.
"You don't need to be here, Julian," said Gia firmly. They were in a massive room whose picture window gave out on the views of Rosalind Forest. It was a surprisingly fancy room. Julian had always thought of the guard as a place of dark stone and heavy wood. This room had brocade wallpaper and gilt furniture upholstered in velvet. Annabelle sat in a wing-backed armchair, looking ill at ease. Magnus was leaning against a wall, seemingly bored. He looked exhausted, too. The shadows under his eyes were nearly black. And Kieran stood by the picture window, his attention fixed on the sky and the trees outside.
"I would like him to be with me," said Annabelle. "He is the reason I came."
"We all appreciate you're here, Annabelle," said Gia. "And we appreciate that you had past bad experiences with the Clave."
She sounded calm. Julian wondered if she'd have sounded so calm if she'd seen Annabelle rise from the dead, covered in blood, and stab Malcolm through the heart. Kieran turned away from the window.
"We know Julian Blackthorne," he said to Gia. He sounded more human to Julian than he had when they first met, as if his fairy accent was fading. "We don't know you."
"By which you mean you and Annabelle?" Gia said. Kieran made an expressive fairy gesture that seemed to encompass the room in general.
"I am here because I am the messenger of the Queen," he said. "Annabelle Blackthorne is here for her own reasons, and Magnus is here as he puts up with all of you because of Alec. But do not think that makes it a good idea for you to order us around."
"Annabelle is a shadow hunter," Robert began.
"And I am a prince of fairy," said Kieran. "Son of the king, prince of the frost court, keeper of the cold way, wild hunter, and sword of the host. Do not annoy me."
Magnus cleared his throat.
"He has a point."
"About Alec?" said Robert, raising an eyebrow.
"More generally," said Magnus, "Kieran is a downworlder. Annabelle suffered a fate worse than death at the Clave's hands because she cared for downworlders. Out there in the council hall is the cohort. Today is their grab for power. Preventing them from taking it is more important than rules about where Julian should or shouldn't be standing."
Gia looked at Magnus for a moment.
"And you?" she said, surprisingly gently. "You're a downworlder, Bane."
Magnus gave a slow, tired shrug.
"Oh," he said, "me, I'm..."
The glass he was holding slipped out of his hand. It hit the floor and broke, and a moment later Magnus followed it. He seemed to fold up like paper, his head striking the stone with an ugly thump. Julian lunged forward, but Robert was already grabbing him by the arm.
"Go to the council hall," he said.
Gia was kneeling next to Magnus, her hand on his shoulder.
"Get Alec."
He turned Julian free, and Julian ran. Emma fought her way through the council hall in a state of numb horror. Any pleasure she felt over knocking Manuel on his butt had dissolved. The whole room seemed to be a whirlwind of ugly shouting and waving signs. "Make the Clave pure, and werewolf containment is the answer, and keep downworlders controlled." She pushed past a knot of people, Zara at the center, heard someone saying,
"Can't believe you had to kill that monster Malcolm Fade yourself after the Clave failed."
There was a chorus of agreement.
"Shows what comes of letting warlocks do what they like,"
said someone else.
They're too powerful. It doesn't make practical sense.
Most of the faces in the room were unfamiliar to Emma. She should have known more of them, she thought, but the Blackthorns had lived a life of isolation in their way, rarely leaving the L.A. Institute. Among the cluster of unfamiliar faces, she caught sight of Diana, tall and regal as always. She was striding through the crowd, and hurrying along in her wake were two familiar figures, Aline and Helen, both of them pink-cheeked, wrapped in massive coats and shawls. They must have arrived from Wrangell Island. Now Emma could see the rest of the Blackthorns. Livy, Ty, and Drew were spilling out of their seats, running to Helen, who bent down to open her arms and gather them all in, hugging them tightly. Helen was brushing back Drew's hair, hugging the twins, tears sliding down her face. Mark was there, too, striding toward his sister, and Emma watched with a smile as they threw their arms around each other. In a way it hurt. She would never have that with her parents, never hug them or squeeze their hands again. But it was a good sort of pain. Mark lifted his sister off her feet, and Aline watched, smiling as the two embraced.
"Manuel Villalobos is limping," said Christina.
She had come up behind Emma and wrapped her arms around her from behind, resting her chin on her friend's shoulder.
"Did you do that?"
"I might have," Emma murmured. She heard Christina giggle.
"He was trying to talk me into joining the cohort."
She turned around and squeezed Christina's hand.
"We're going to take them down. They won't win, right?"
She glanced at Christina's pendant.
"Tell me the angel is on our side."
Christina shook her head.
"I am worried," she said. "Worried for Mark, for Helen, and for Kieran."
"Kieran's a witness for the Clave. The cohort can't touch him."
"He's a prince of fairy. Everything they hate. And I do not think I realized until we arrived here how much they hate. They will not want him to speak, and they will absolutely not want the council to listen."
"That's why we're here to make them listen," Emma began. But Christina was looking past her, a startled expression on her face. Emma turned to see Diego, miraculously without Zara, beckoning Christina from an empty row of seats.
"I must go and talk to him," Christina said.
She squeezed Emma's shoulder, looking suddenly hopeful. Emma wished her luck, and Christina disappeared into the crowd, leaving Emma looking around for Julian. She didn't see her parabatai anywhere, but what she did see was a tight group of shadow hunters, Mark among them, and a sudden silver flash of weapons. Samantha Larkspear had pulled a wicked-looking blade. Emma headed toward the raised voices, her hand already reaching for Cortana's hilt. Mark loved all his brothers and sisters, none more than the others. Still, Helen was special. She was like him, half-fairy, drawn to its temptations. Helen even claimed she could remember their mother, Nerissa, though Mark couldn't. He set Helen down on her feet, ruffling her pale hair. Her face. She looked different, older. Not in lines around her eyes or coarsening skin, just in a certain cast of her features. He wondered if she had named the stars through the years as he did. Julian, Tiberius, Livia, Drusilla, Octavian. And she would have added another that he never had. Mark.
"I would speak to you," he said, "of Neen, our mother's sister."
An echo of fairy formality was in her voice when she replied. "Diana told me you met her in fairy. I knew of her, but not of where she could be found. We should speak of her and of other matters as pressing." She looked up at him and sighed, touching her hand to his cheek. "Such as when you got so tall." "I think it happened when I was in the hunt. Should I apologize?"
"Not at all. I was worried."
She stepped back to look at him quizzically.
"I think I may owe Kieran Kingson some thanks for his care of you, as I owe Aline for her care of you."
Helen smiled at that.
"She is the light of my days."
She glanced up at the large clock over the dais. "We have little time now, Mark. If all goes as we hope, we will have forever to confer with one another. But either way, Aline and I will remain this night in Alicante, and from what Gia says, so will you. It will give us a chance to talk."
"That depends on how tonight goes, doesn't it?"
A sharp voice interrupted them. It was Samantha Larkspear. Mark vaguely remembered that she had a brother who looked a great deal like her. She wore Centaurian gear and carried a placard that said, "The only good fairy is a dead fairy." There was a blob of what looked like black paint at the bottom of the sign. "Pithy," Mark said, but Helen had paled with shock, staring at the words on the placard. "After this afternoon's vote, if scum like you are allowed in Alicante, I'd be very surprised," Samantha said. "Enjoy it while you can." "You're talking to the wife of the consul's daughter," said Aline, her nostrils flaring. "Watch your mouth, Samantha Larkspear." Samantha made an odd, gulping, hissing noise and reached for her weapons belt, flashing a dagger with a thick knuckle guard hilt. Mark could see her brother, pale and black-haired as she was, pushing toward them through the crowd. Helen had her hand on the serif blade in her belt. Moving instinctively, Mark reached for the blade at his own hip, tensed for violence. Kit looked up when Julian's hand fell on his shoulder. He'd been slouching in his chair, mostly looking at Alicante through the big glass window behind the wooden stage-like thing at the front of the room. He'd been deliberately not looking at Livy and Ty, greeting their sister. Something about the tight knot of blackthorns hugging and exclaiming over each other reminded him exactly of how much he wasn't one of them, in a way he hadn't been reminded since Los Angeles. "Your sister's here," he said to Julian. He pointed. "Helen." Julian glanced over at his siblings briefly. Kit had the feeling he already knew. He looked tense and sparking at the edges, like a snapped electrical wire. "I need you to do something," he said. "Alex guarding the east doors to the hall. Go find him and bring him to Magnus. Tell him Magnus is in the consul's guest quarters. He'll know where that is." Kit swung his legs off the chair in front of him. "Why?" "Just trust me." Julian stood up. "Make it look like it's your idea. Like you need Alec to show you something or help you find someone. I don't want anyone's curiosity stirred up." "You're not really thinking of fighting in the middle of the council hall, are you?" said Emma. "I mean, considering that it would be illegal and all that." She clicked her tongue against her teeth. "Not a good idea, Samantha. Put that dagger away." The small group, Helen, Aline, Mark, and Samantha, turned to stare at Emma as if she'd appeared in a puff of smoke. They'd all been too angry to notice her approach. The gold clock overhead began to chime urgently. The crowd started to unknot itself, shadow hunters searching for empty seats in the rows facing the dais. Dane Larkspear, who'd been coming toward his sister, had halted in the middle of the aisle. Emma saw to her surprise that Manuel was blocking his way. Maybe Manuel didn't think a Centaurian brawling on the floor of the council hall would be a great idea either. Zara was looking over too, her red mouth set in an angry line. "You don't get to pull rank on me, Aline Penhollow," said Samantha, but she shoved her dagger back into its sheath. "Not when you're married to that thing." "Did you draw that?" Emma interrupted, pointing at the blobby sketch on Samantha's placard. "Is that supposed to be a dead fairy?" She was pretty sure it was. The sketch had arms and legs and dragonfly wings, sort of. "Impressive," said Emma. "You've got talent, Samantha, real talent." Samantha looked surprised. "You think so?" "God, no," said Emma. "Now go sit down. Zara's waving at you." Samantha hesitated and then turned away. Emma grabbed hold of Helen's hand. They started to walk toward the long bench where the blackthorns were seated. Her heart was thumping. Not that Samantha was much danger, but if they'd started something and the rest of Zara's friends had joined in, it could have been a real fight. Aline and Mark were on either side of them. Helen's fingers curled around Emma's arm. "I remember this," she said in a low voice. Her fingertips brushed the scar that Cortana had made years ago, when Emma had clutched the blade to her body after her parents' death. It was Helen who had been there when Emma woke up in a world where her parents were gone forever, though it was Julian who had placed the sword in Emma's arms. But now Cortana was strapped on her back. Now was their chance to right the wrongs of the past, the wrongs done to Helen and Mark and those like them by the Clave.
the wrong McClave had done to the Carstairs in ignoring their deaths. It made the knowledge that she would soon be exiled hurt even more, the thought that she would not be with the Blackthorns when they were reunited. They sped up as they got close to the other Blackthorns, and there was Julian, standing among his siblings. His eyes met Emma's. She could see even across the distance between them that his had turned nearly black. She knew without having to ask. Something was very wrong. Alec Lightwood was very hard to keep up with. He was older than Kit, and he had longer legs, and he'd taken off, flat out running, the moment Kit had told him that Magnus needed him. Kit wasn't sure their cover story that he wanted Alec to show him around the guard was going to hold up if anyone stopped them. But no one did. The loud chiming was still sounding, and everyone was hurrying toward the main council hall. When they burst into the high-ceilinged consul's quarters, they found Magnus lying on a long sofa. Kieran and Annabelle were at opposite ends of the room, staring like cats just introduced to a new environment. Gia and Robert stood by the sofa. Alec started toward it, and his father moved to put a hand on his shoulder. Alec stopped where he was, his whole body tense. "Let me go," he said. "He's fine," said Robert. "Brother Enoch was just here. His magic's depleted, and he's weak, but..." "I know what's wrong with him," Alec said, pushing past the Inquisitor. Robert watched his son as Alec knelt down by the side of the long couch. He brushed Magnus's hair back from his forehead, and the warlock stirred and murmured. "He hasn't been well for a while," said Alec, half to himself. "His magic gets depleted so fast. I told him to go to the Spiral Labyrinth, but there hasn't been time." Kit stared. He'd heard of Magnus even before he'd met him, of course. Magnus was famous in Downworld. And when he had met Magnus, the warlock had been so full of kinetic energy, a whirl of dry wit and blue fire. It hadn't even occurred to him that Magnus might get sick or tired. "Is there any way to make him feel better?" said Annabelle. She was vibrating with tension, her hands working at her sides. He noticed for the first time that she was missing a finger on her right hand. He hadn't looked at her too closely before. She gave him the creeps. "I need him." Admirably, Alec didn't lose his temper. "He needs rest," he said. "We could delay the meeting." "Alec, we can't," Gia spoke gently. "Obviously Magnus should rest. Annabelle, you'll be taken care of, I promise."
"No."
Annabelle shrunk back against the wall.
"I want Magnus with me, or Julian. Get Julian." "What's going on?"
Kit recognized her voice even before he turned to see Zara in the doorway. Her lipstick looked like a harsh slash of blood against her pale skin. She was looking at Magnus, the corner of her mouth twisted in a smirk.
"Consul," she said and bowed to Gia. "Everyone is assembled. Should I tell them the meeting will be delayed?"
"No, Miss Dearborn," said Gia, smoothing down her embroidered robe. "Thank you, but we don't need you to handle this for us. The assembly will go as planned."
"Dearborn," Annabelle echoed. Her gaze was fixed on Zara. Her eyes had gone flat and glittering like a snake's. "You're a Dearborn."
Zara looked merely puzzled, as if wondering who Annabelle might be.
"Zara is quite an advocate for restricting the rights of downworlders," Gia said neutrally.
"We're interested in safety," Zara said, clearly stung. "That's all." "We had better go," said Robert Lightwood. He was still looking at Alec, but Alec wasn't looking at him. He was sitting by Magnus, his hand against Magnus's cheek.
"Alec, if you need me, send for me."
"I'll send Kit," Alec said without looking around.
"I'll return for you," Robert said to Kieran, who had remained silently by the window, barely a shadow in the room's shadows.
Kieran nodded. Robert squeezed Alec's shoulder briefly. Gia extended a hand to Annabelle, and after a moment of staring at Zara, Annabelle followed the consul and the Inquisitor from the room.
"Is he sick?" Zara said, looking at Magnus with a distant interest. "I didn't think warlocks got sick."
"Wouldn't it be funny if he died before you? I mean, what with him being immortal, you must have thought it would go the other way."
Alec raised his head slowly.
What?
Well, I mean, since Magnus is immortal and you, you know, aren't, she clarified.
He's immortal? Alec's voice was colder than Kit had ever heard it.
I wish you'd told me that before. I would have turned back time and found myself a nice mortal husband to grow old with.
Well, wouldn't that be better? Zara said. Then you could get old and die at the same time.
At the same time, Alec echoed. He had barely moved or raised his voice, but his rage seemed to fill the room. Even Zara was starting to look uneasy. How would you suggest we arrange that? Jump off a cliff together when one of us started feeling sickly?
Maybe,
Zara looked sulky. You have to agree the situation you're in is a tragedy. Alec rose to his feet, and in that moment was the famous Alec Lightwood Kit had heard about, the hero of past battles, the archer boy with a deadly aim. This is what I want and what I've chosen, he said. How dare you tell me it's a tragedy? Magnus never pretended. He never tried to fool me into thinking it would be easy. But choosing Magnus is one of the easiest things I've ever done. We all have a lifetime, Zara, and none of us know how long or short it might be. Surely even you know that. I expect you mean to be rude and cruel, but I doubt you meant to sound stupid as well. She flushed.
But if you die of old age and he lives forever,
then he'll be there for Max, and that makes both of us happy, said Alec. And I will be a uniquely lucky person, because there will be someone who always remembers me, who will always love me. Magnus won't always mourn, but until the end of time he will remember me and love me.
What makes you so sure? Said Zara, but there was an edge of uncertainty in her voice.
Because he's 3,000 times the human being you'll ever be, said Alec.
Now, get out of here, before I risk his life by waking him up so he can turn you into a garbage fire. Something that would match your personality.
Oh, said Zara. So rude. Kit thought it was more than rude. He thought Alec meant it. You kind of hoped Zara would stick around to test the theory. Instead, she stalked toward the door and paused there, glancing back at them with dislike.
Come on, Alec, she said. The truth is that shadow hunters and downworlders aren't meant to be together. You and Bane are a disgrace. But you can't just be content with the Clave letting you pervert your angelic lineage. No, you have to force it on the rest of us.
Really? Said Kieran, who Kit had nearly forgotten was there. You all have to sleep with Magnus Bane. How exciting for you.
Shut up, fairy dirt, said Zara. You'll learn. You've picked the wrong side. You and those Blackthorns and Jace Herondale, that ginger bitch Clary.
She was breathing hard, her face flushed.
I'll enjoy watching you all go down, she said, and flounced from the room.
Did she really say, pervert your angelic lineage? Said Alec, looking stupefied.
Fairy dirt, mused Kieran. That is, as Mark would say, a new one.
Unbelievable.
Alec sat down next to the sofa again, drawing up his knees.
Nothing she said surprised me, said Kieran. That is how they are. That is how the cold pieces made them. Afraid of what is new and different and filled with hatred like ice. She may seem ridiculous, Zara Dearborn, but do not make the mistake of underestimating her and the cohort.
He looked down at the window. Hate like that can tear down the world.
This is a very strange request, said Diego. You're the one with the fake relationship, said Christina. I'm sure you've been asked for stranger things.
Diego laughed, not with much humor. They were sitting a row away from the Blackthorns in the council hall. The clock had stopped chiming to announce the meeting's beginning, and the room was full, though the dais was still empty.
I'm glad Jaime told you, he said, selfishly. I could bear that you hated me, but not that you despised me.
Christina sighed.
I'm not sure I could ever really despise you, she said. I should have told you more, he said. I wanted to keep you safe. And I denied myself that the cohort and their plans were your problem. I didn't know they had designs on the Los Angeles Institute until it was too late. And I was mistaken in Manuel, as much as anyone. I trusted him. I know, Christina said. It is not that I blame you for anything. For such a long time, we were Christina and Diego, a pair, together. And when that was over, I felt half myself. When you came back, I thought we could be as we were before, and I tried, but... You don't love me like that anymore, he finished. She paused for a moment. No, she said. I don't. Not like that. It was like trying to return to a place in your childhood you remember as perfect. It will always have changed, because you have changed.
Diego's Adam's apple moved as he swallowed.
I can't blame you. I don't like myself much right now. Maybe this could help you like yourself a little more. It would be a great kindness, Diego.
He shook his head.
Trust you, I suppose, to take pity on a lost fairy. It isn't pity, said Christina.
She glanced back over her shoulder. Zara had left the room some moments earlier and hadn't returned yet. Samantha was glaring at her, though, apparently in the belief that Christina was trying to steal Zara's fiancé.
They frighten me. They will kill him after he testifies.
The cohort is frightening, said Diego. But the cohort is not the Centaurians, and not all Centaurians are like Zara. Rayan, Divya, Jen are good people. Like the Clave, it is an organization that has a cancer at its heart. Some of the body is sick and some healthy. Our mission is to discover a way to kill the sickness without killing off the body. The doors of the council hall opened. The consul, Gia Penhallow, entered, her silver-flecked dark robes sweeping around her. The room, which had been full of lively chatter, sank to hushed murmurs. Christina sat back as the consul began to climb the stairs to the dais.
Thank you all for coming on such short notice, Nephilim. The consul stood in front of a low wooden podium, its base decorated with a sigil of four C's. There was gray in her black hair now that Emma didn't remember seeing before, wrinkles at the corners of her eyes. It couldn't be easy, being the consul during a time of unspoken war. Most of you know about Malcolm Fade. He was one of our closest allies, or so we thought. He betrayed us some weeks ago, and even now we are still learning of the bloody and terrible crimes he committed.
The murmur that went around the room sounded to Emma like a rush of the tide. She wished Julian was next to her, so she could bump his shoulder with hers, or squeeze his hand, but, mindful of the Inquisitor's instruction, they had sat at the opposite end of the long bench after he told her Magnus had collapsed.
I promised Annabelle Magnus would be with her, he'd said in a low voice, not wanting the younger Blackthorns to hear and be panicked. I gave my word. You couldn't have guessed. Poor Magnus. There was no way to know he was sick. But she remembered herself saying, "Don't promise what you can't deliver," and she felt cold all over. There is a longer story to Fade's betrayal, one you might not know, Gia said. In 1812 he fell in love with a shadow hunter girl, Annabelle Blackthorn. Her family deplored the idea of her marrying a warlock. In the end, she was murdered by other Nephilim. Malcolm was told she had become an Iron Sister.
Why didn't they kill him, too? Called someone from the crowd.
He was a powerful warlock, a valuable asset, said Gia. In the end, it was decided to leave him alone. But when he discovered what had actually happened to Annabelle, he lost his mind. This past century, he has been seeking revenge against shadow hunters. My lady! It was Zara, upright and very prim. She had just come through the hall doors and was standing in the aisle. You tell us this story as if you mean for us to have sympathy for the girl in the warlock. But Malcolm Fade was a monster, a murderer. Some girl's infatuation with him doesn't excuse what he did. I find, said Gia, that there is a difference between an excuse and an explanation. Then why are we being treated to this explanation? The warlock is dead.
I hope this is not some attempt to wring reparations out of the council. No one associated with that monster deserves any recompense for his death.
Gia's look was like the edge of a blade.
I understand you've been very active in council affairs lately, Zara, she said. That does not mean you can interrupt the consul. Go sit down.
After a moment, Zara sat, looking angry. Aline pumped her fist.
Go, Mom, she whispered.
However, someone else had risen up to take Zara's place. Her father.
Consul, he said. We're not ignorant. We were told this meeting would involve significant testimony by a witness that would impact the clave. Isn't it about time you brought that witness out? If indeed they exist.
Oh, she exists, Gia said. It is Annabelle. Annabelle Blackthorne. Now the murmur that went through the room sounded like the crash of a wave. A moment later, Robert Lightwood appeared, wearing a grim expression. Behind him came two guards, and between them walked Annabelle. Annabelle seemed quite small as she came up on the dais beside the Inquisitor. The black volume was hanging from a strap over her back, which made her look even younger, like a girl on her way to school. A hiss went through the room. Undead, Emma heard, and unclean. Annabelle shrunk back against Robert.
This is an outrage, sputtered Zara's father. Did we not all suffer enough from the corrosive filth of the Indarkand? Must you bring this thing in front of us?
Julian sprang to his feet.
The Indarkand were not undead, he said, turning to face the hall. They were turned by the infernal cup. Annabelle is exactly who she was in life. She was tortured by Malcolm, kept in a half-alive state for years. She wants to help us. Julian Blackthorne, sneered Dearborn. My daughter told me about you. Your uncle was mad. Your whole family's mad. Only a madman could find this a good idea.
Do not, said Annabelle, and her voice rang out clear and strong.
Speak that way to him. He is my blood kin. Blackthorns, said Dearborn. Seems they're all mad, dead, or both.
If he'd expected a laugh, he didn't get one. The room was silent.
Sit, the consul said to Dearborn coldly. It appears your family has an issue with the way Nephilim are meant to comport themselves. Interrupt me again, and you'll be thrown out of the hall.
Dearborn sat, but his eyes gleamed with rage. He wasn't the only one. Emma scanned the room quickly and saw clusters of hateful glares directed at the dais. She choked back her nerves. Julian had pushed his way into the aisle and was standing facing the front of the room. Annabelle, he said, his voice low and encouraging, tell them about the king.
The Unseelie King, Annabelle said softly. The Lord of Shadows. He was in league with Malcolm. It is important you all know this, because even now he plans the destruction of all Shadow Hunters.
But the fair folk are weak.
A man in an embroidered gondola was on his feet, dark eyes sparkling with concern. Christina murmured into Emma's ear that he was the head of the Marrakesh Institute.
Years of the Cold Peace have weakened them. The king cannot hope to stand against us.
Not in a clash of equal armies, no, Annabelle said in her small voice. But the king has harnessed the power of the Black Volume, and he has learned how to destroy the power of the Nephilim, how to cancel out their runes, seraph blades, and witchlight. You'd be fighting his forces with no more power than mundanes.
This absolutely cannot be true.
It was a thin, dark-haired man Emma remembered from the long-ago discussion of the Cold Peace, Laszlo Balak, head of the Budapest Institute.
She is lying. She has no reason to lie.
Diana was on her feet now, too, her shoulders set back in a fighting stance.
Laszlo, of all the people, Miss Rayburn,
the Hungarian man's expression hardened.
I think we all know you should recuse yourself from the discussion.
Diana froze.
You fraternize with fairies,
he went on, smacking his lips as he spoke.
You've been observed.
Oh, by the angel, Laszlo, said the consul. Diana has nothing to do with this, other than having the bad fortune to disagree with you.
Laszlo's right, said Horace Dearborn. The Blackthorns are fairy sympathizers, betrayers of the law.
But we're not liars, said Julian.